The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
On this episode of Revelator, I welcome music guest Static Cult. I also cover the top movies, my World War Z review, story time with Ryan, a look at Major League Baseball standings halfway through the season, all this and more happening now.
Delivering the goods at every freaking turn.
No doubt about it. Welcome to Revelator. My name is Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me. As always, appreciate you checking us out here on the show. Great show for you tonight. The band Static Cult will be on. Jimmy from the band, singer, guitar player from the band Static Cult. Definitely stick around for that. We're actually playing four songs from these guys. One of the first bands we've actually played more than three songs for, so you definitely want to stick around for that. It's going to be a really, really good time. Really cool interview. Jimmy's a good guy, and we appreciate him taking time out for us. But, you know, it's 4th of July is right around the corner, right? And I'm in the heartland of the U.S., you know, Nashville, Tennessee, in the South. And I don't think it gets any better, especially if you're in the States. You know, 4th of July, at least for me anyway, is always a fun time and always enjoyable. You know, the weather is typically really nice. You know, summer is in full swing. And, of course, there's the fireworks aspect of it all. Now, I will say, I've got story time with Ryan tonight, and this is, I guess, my screwed up version of a public service announcement for all you out there of what not to do with fireworks. Okay, now I still have all my fingers, just in case anybody's curious, fully functional. But I got some fireworks stories to share for you. The first one, my producer Mike is actually part of this story. This is many, many years ago. We're late teens, and we're, lighting fireworks at my buddy Mike's parents' house right now. His parents are on vacation in the summertime. And so, you know, we got some fireworks, you know, and being in Northeast Ohio, it's hard to obtain fireworks. It's not as easy as in Nashville, Tennessee, where I'm at now. And so we get all these bottle rockets and Roman candles and the whole deal, right? Instead of, you know, finding a mechanism to shoot them with, no, that's not nearly fun enough for us. We decided we like to hold them in our hands, light them, and throw them. Of course, that obviously increases the element of surprise, not knowing exactly where the bottle rocket's going to zoom to or who you're going to be throwing it at. And two instances stick in mind. One is one of the bottle rockets kind of ended up being a dud and I think it did land on the roof in the gutter and started sparking. Luckily, the house did not catch fire. We're lucky on that account. The other one, Mike used to drive this old station wagon. We used to call it the Beast. Do you remember what year that vehicle was, the Beast?
Yes, I do. It was a 1984 Oldsmobile Custom Cruiser station wagon. It was light sable brown.
It was the Beast, no doubt.
The Beast.
And we had many good rides on that. Now, I remember one of the bottle rockets actually entering into the Beast and actually fireworks going off in the Beast. It just smoke bellowing out of the windows of the Beast in summertime, you know, and just the awful smell of bottle rockets being, you know, soaring around inside the cab. Now, my other fireworks story, it takes place in Cincinnati, Ohio. Now, fast forward many, many years. This is about, you know, maybe 5 years ago, I guess. And I had a decided I was going to create a mortar shell cannon of sorts at a PCP pipe. Because shooting with my hand at, you know, in my 20s, it just didn't seem right. I had to be a little bit more responsible. So let's make a cannon. So down in Cincinnati, we're actually having a really successful time shooting fireworks. You know, we're being safe, you know, only lighting a couple at a time, dropping them in the canister. You know, things are going well, right? And of course, as the 4th of July weekend progresses, a few more drinks ensue. And we decided to take our mobile mortar shell fireworks rocket blasting cannon to a party. I don't know anyone at this party. I'm like, yeah, sure. What the heck? I'm here. I'll go to a party and I'll bring my explosives with me. So I'm at this party and, you know, we get everything set up, with, you know, and I'm like, oh, they're like, oh, this is a really cool mechanism. You build this? I'm like, yes, I did build this. And, you know, so we demonstrate, everything's working great until the mechanism I had built, it actually ended up kind of got too hot and kind of melted and fell over, and then rockets starting shooting out the back of the cannon, firing at people on the party, who, again, I don't know whose party this is. I'm like, thank you for inviting me to your party. I will shoot fireworks at you now. And I almost hit several individuals. I almost caught a tree on fire at this party as well. Just so you know, be safe out there with fireworks and have yourself a nice 4th of July weekend. If you have any interesting fireworks stories, you know, or end up, you know, losing a finger or two, I definitely want to hear about it. Get a hold of me on Twitter, Ryan_unsigned on Twitter, and definitely share some fireworks stories if you would, please. I would definitely love to hear them. And so those are a couple of my fireworks stories. It's been story time with Ryan. And you know what? A special guest tonight is Harry Carey. Hey, Harry Carey here. You want to talk about baseball? I love baseball. I like Cracker Jacks, hot dogs, and the seventh inning stretch, and the sun that's been beating on my head for 4 hours. NBA's over. Hockey's over. The boys of summer are here to play. Thanks, Harry Carey. I appreciate that. Let's take a look at our division leaders. This is the wild card race as it stands right now in Major League Baseball, okay? Division leaders, you have Boston, Texas, Cleveland Indians. Yes, I said the Cleveland Indians are a division leader in first place. Yeah, it's true. And also in the wild card hunt in the American League, it's a really tight race. You have, you know, Oakland and Baltimore right now. The playoffs were to start today. Now, also you have Detroit, the Yankees, and Tampa Bay, and Toronto, all within 5 games of one another. So this race in the American League is going to get very interesting as we head into the halfway point of the season and in the backstretch of the summer. The National League, a little bit more divided. Obviously, you have Atlanta, Arizona as your division winners or leaders at this point in time, and the Pittsburgh Pirates, who have not made the playoffs since 1992, are 51-30 and have the best record in baseball. Surprise to me, and probably a surprise to many. On the wild card spot, though, you have St. Louis and Cincinnati right there. And I don't see that really changing a whole lot. Maybe the Washington Nationals creep in there. Maybe the Giants get hot. I don't know. But I think right now the National League looks set. But hey, anything can happen. There's a lot of baseball to go. But that's, you know, your Major League Baseball lookout right now as far as the midway point of the season. Let's take a look at music news now. Lemmy from Motorhead. It's been known that he's had some major health issues of late, and they've actually canceled Motorhead's all upcoming summer festivals and shows. Lemmy in a statement said, I want to thank everyone who's wished me well. It's a tough decision for me. I don't like to disappoint fans, especially in times where the economy is bad and where people spend their hard-earned money to see us. But sometimes you can't do anything but follow doctor's orders. I'm sure I'll be back to kick everyone's ass. Lemmy from Motorhead taking a break. Report is that, you know, health is not good. So, you know, doing the right thing, taking a break from the summer road, and hopefully be back maybe this fall or in winter to do you know, obviously promo the new album and all that good stuff. So hopefully Lemmy from Motorhead will get healthy and get back on the road again. I can't imagine heavy metal without Lemmy playing, right? I mean, anybody else? I can't. The 2013 Rockstar Energy Uproar Festival. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. Really a great lineup. Alice in Chains, Jane's Addiction, obviously leading the charge with that. Now, they're also setting up an opportunity for unsigned independent bands to be the focus of this year's event as well. 2013 Ernie Ball Battle of the Bands will launch July 1st. It launched a couple days ago, and will run through September 1st. Bands can enter the competition for a chance to perform in the Zippo Encore Festival stage powered by Ernie Ball in their particular market. You can head to the official website, Ernie Ball's official website, where you can provide an MP3 recording to be considered and have your fans vote on you to enter and be on the stage for the 2013 Rockstar Energy Uproar Festival. It just rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it? Now, the finalists will compete for the grand prize, which includes a permanent spot on next year's tour, and also will include a record deal, $10,000 in gear, and national radio exposure. So there's obviously a lot of stake here for at least one band to obviously be on tour next year with who knows who's going to be on the festival next year, but obviously getting a record deal, getting, you know, a bunch of gear and, you know, radio play, which is really huge. Now, the final judges of this contests are going to be Jerry Cantrell and Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses, formerly of Guns N' Roses. So be interesting. Said they're looking forward to getting an unsigned band some national exposure, which I think is cool. These guys are trying to reach out and find that up and coming band. I'd have to say we've had quite a few of them on our show on Revelator. You're going to hear a bunch of them on the July 16th show. The Hush, Spider Rockets, Varna, True Apothecary, Damon Black, the list goes on and on. So definitely check that out July 16th here on Revelator Music Show, featuring a lot of past guests. It's going to be a really good time. And also, John Lennon, 1965 light blue Ferrari, is going up for auction on July 12th at the Goodwood Festival of Speed Sale. Now, the car is one of the top-of-the-line models that dealers, obviously going to pay top-notch for. This is the vehicle that John Lennon bought after he got his driver's license in February 1965. He shelled out £2,000, which in today's money would be about $46,000. The restored 330 GT Coupe is expected to fetch around $340,000. Now, they say that's actually pretty cheap for one of John Lennon's, prized possessions. A Rolls Royce owned by John Lennon, which was sold at auction in 1985, went for a whopping $2.3 million. Unbelievable. Now, Lennon's Rolls Royce is actually currently in the lobby of the Royal BC Museum in Victoria, British Columbia. Very, very cool stuff. And you know what? I think it's time to bring our guest on. Before we bring Jimmy from Static Cult on, let's take a listen to one of the first song tonight, which is Salvation, here on Revelator, Static Cult. That is Salvation by the Static Cult here on Revelator, and I'm joined now by Jimmy from the band. Jimmy, thanks for taking the time out, man. How you been?
I'm very good. Just chilling out with a glass of wine tonight on this evening. And it's really good to chat with you, Ryan.
Wonderful. Now, I got to ask, is this red wine, or are you doing white wine, or what's your preference there?
Red wine's my preference.
Red wine, right. Ryan? Yeah. You're more of a dry, Well, cool, man. Always good to have, you know, some wine kick back. And again, appreciate you taking the time out. Now you guys have been busy the last couple of years, man. You've played all kinds of shows. You guys have opened up for a lot of great bands. I mean, it's too big of a list to go through them all, but here's some of them for people who may not be aware of what you guys have been up to. And that's, you know, Offspring, Green Day, Bush, Bad Religion, Goldfinger. The list really does go on here. You guys have really been out, you know, playing shows, you know, homing your craft. I got to ask, man, what is the experience you guys have gained as a, you know, somewhat of a young band? You know, what experiences you guys gained from playing with these bands that have been in the industry for a long period of time, some of them over 20 years?
Well, first off, we're a young band, but we're not young people. We've been in the industry for quite a long time. And the most, I think, the experience we've gained from playing with the bigger bands is respect for the industry itself, for other bands. It's obviously, it's amazing to play with these bands, and it's so humbling. It's fantastic to play with your heroes, but they teach you a lot. What younger bands seem to lack these days is respect, or, you know, having things professional. Just the whole package of the show and giving more to the audience is the paying customer. So that's what we've gained from it. It basically made us more professional as a unit.
No, I think it definitely shows, you know, listening to the album and you know, going online here and, you know, other interviews you guys have done and live bits and feeds. Now, I mean, obviously playing with these bands, you know, bands you look up to, maybe even, you know, obviously some influence in your personal music. These guys ever, you know, take some time out when you're playing these shows or festivals or wherever you may be and give you some advice like, hey, you know, we like what you guys are doing. Here's some advice for, you know, here's our 2 cents on, you know, that can help you, or, you know, whether it be musically or professionally at all.
Yeah, a couple of bands have actually taken us aside or taken us under the wing. But more personally, it's my best friend who's actually given me the best advice. And he used to be the guitarist in one of Britain's biggest rock bands called The Almighty. And they called it a day, mid-90s, but they were absolutely huge band. And he's been my best friend for over 20 years. But his advice over 20 years ago, it's always stuck with me, was just to keep writing, you know. And that's what I did, you know, and it paid off.
Right? No, definitely. The album is great, man. Now, obviously, you've played a lot of shows, played with a lot of different bands. What's the most interesting thing you recall from playing a live show, whether it be in the crowd or on stage? Or is there anything that kind of sticks out, like, you know, on a certain live show, that, you know, anything crazy that's happened to you or interesting?
Well, the local shows are certainly a bit crazy. But one show we played, I don't know if it's interesting, but our roadie decided to jump, you know, from the back of the stage. He ran from the back of the stage to the front of the stage, and we're playing at about 5,000. And he jumped to do the crowd surfing thing, but he's a big lad, or a large boy, shall we say. When he landed, he broke her nose, her arm, because he landed on top of her, and they couldn't catch him because he was too heavy. So we had to stop the mid-show and you know, doing a huge stadium. That happened. So I don't know if it's interesting, but it was certainly wow. You know.
No, I don't mean to laugh. I mean, just looking back, it's probably pretty funny now, and I imagine it's probably, you know, kind of a joke. But like, hey, man, no more stage diving. Don't hurt anybody.
It's funny because we've got it on DVD, and I watch it every and you just see this big person disappearing, you know, because they can't hold them. It's just, you know, you see all the stage diving, and it's fantastic because people surf. This just didn't happen. The sea opened right up, and he just, you know, he took this girl down. It was a shame. I think she was only like 12 years old or something. Oh, it was terrible. No, but she's fine. Oh, I got to state, she is fine. She was absolutely checked. So I can tell the story now. She is fine.
Well, that's good. Probably a story she'll always be able to tell you through her life. Like, hey, I saw a static cult, you know. So that's a great story, and good that she's okay, and, you know, obviously no lasting long-term effects or anything. So that's always good to know. Yeah. Now, obviously you guys have played lots of shows. Other than, you know, the stage diving antics, I mean, do you have any pre-show rituals or things you guys kind of prep yourselves for, or get, you know, kind of psych yourself up before a show? Or
well, we don't actually. We really don't do anything. We used to kind of hug and stuff like that, but it's kind of phased out. We really don't do much. I think we don't spend much time together before the show. So no, we don't do anything before the show. We have a couple of drinks together, and that's it. That's quite a boring, you know, answer, but we really don't do anything. But, you know, we love playing live. As soon as we go on, we give 200% of our souls to the audience, and we just go for it. So that's our favorite part. So we don't have any rituals. Sorry, dude.
No worries. Now, I imagine a song that it goes really good live is the second song we're going to hear tonight from you guys, which is Birth of a Nation. I imagine you probably get a lot of people singing this song back to you guys live when you play it. Talk to me about that experience. It's got to be pretty humbling when, you know, you're playing in front of, you know, a couple thousand people, and you cue this song up and people are kind of singing it back to you. I'd imagine that's what happens. Talk to me about how humbling that is, and, you know, what a – it's got to feel good that, you know, hey, we're writing good songs and people are really into it.
Well, you're absolutely right, Ryan. It is extremely humbling. We were in the Netherlands a few months ago, and when you're, you know, when you're in a different country, they're singing the songs back to you, and you're quite a far away from home. That's extremely extremely humbling. And it's wonderful. It's so strange, but Birth of a Nation, they seem to know they know the lyrics. I sometimes forget the lyrics. They know the lyrics better than me. But Birth of a Nation is one of those songs. It is not as fun to play as it is to hear. So because we all have our favorite songs, but Birth of a Nation was one of those ones that the kids kind of picked. we didn't envision that as the hit song because we knew what we wanted as the song, the single and stuff. But so they kind of picked Birth of a Nation, and it's really strange to see people singing, you know, what they want that track, because for us it was not meant for to be the hit. So it's always interesting to hear what the kids. It's amazing as well when you see kids with tattoos of the songs. That's absolutely it's wonderful. Also, a bit recently, you know, we've been asked to do songs for people's weddings, you know, their first dance. I've had two of them so far, and it's amazing that people want to actually use our songs for such life-changing events. So, yeah, totally humbling, Ryan, totally humbling.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, man, let's take a break here. When we were putting this together, you guys, I mean, the album is really, really good, man. I was actually, you know, I basically put it on repeat today when we were writing the interview before we talked and everything. And, another one of the tracks, which unfortunately we're not going to hear tonight. So I encourage everybody to go out and obviously get this album. Of Fear and Flames is also another great track. I really dig, probably one of my favorites on the album, but,
yes, one of mine as well. I really like that track.
Yeah. Really good track, but I'll tell you what, man, let's take a break when we'll hear Birth of a Nation here, the Static Cult here on Revelator. one. The Static Call here on Revelator, that is Birth of a Nation. Again, Jimmy, really great track, man. And you guys, obviously, you mentioned you guys have been around a long, for a while as far as musicians in the industry for quite some time. And the first album, again, your debut album, is great under the Static Call name. Now, a lot of people may not know this, but on the first album, your debut album, you worked with Gilby Clark from Guns N' Roses. Two things, I guess. What was it like working with him, and how were you two introduced?
Well, because we've been about a while, what happened was we were on tour with an LA band called The Bronx. Do you know them?
I'm actually familiar with their music, yes.
Right, so they're good friends of mine from back in the day. So we're touring with them, and their first album was done by Gilby Clark. So they put the they kind of connected us, and that was how we got talking. And so we talked with a few promoters. In fact, funnily enough, we spoke with people like Matt Sorum, the drummer of Guns N' Roses, but Gilby ended up being the guy that we went with. And so we flew out in November 2006, because the band's been about a lot longer than people think. Actually, the band's been about since 2005. And we did the album in LA with Gilby as the producer. The album wasn't as successful as it was, as it should have been. And so we kind of just wiped it, renamed the band, and we just kind of changed the way things were going. We didn't like the way the album sounded. We didn't like what happened. It was great to work with Gilby. He's a fantastic producer and a good friend, but it just didn't come out how we expected. So we kind of scrapped the album. And if you look online, you'll probably find it. But we don't really recognize it as part of us. So we changed the name and did the album again. And that's where the debut album for the Static Call came from. We did it at home with one of our friends, which is kind of strange because, the one in LA cost thousands and thousands of dollars. The one at home cost a couple of hundred quid. There you go.
Yeah, right on. Well, definitely interesting transition. I would mention, changing the name and, recording, re-recording, scrapping it and redoing it. So obviously, probably a pretty stressful time, I'd imagine, for you guys. But, fast forward to where we are right now. I mean, you guys are working on new material, a new album. Do you guys have anything in place as far as maybe a release date or a tentative working title for the album at all?
The release date is maybe January next year. We're pretty much halfway through the record right now, and we're doing it again with the same people that did the first record because we know the sound they can produce, and it's the sound we like. So we're doing exactly the same what we did. It's going to be another short album like the first one, but it's 30 minutes long, same as the last one. But it's a lot heavier. It's definitely so much heavier. And we've got new guys in the band, so they're bringing their elements, which is really cool. Actually, it's great. It's sounding great. We don't have a working title. Well, we kind of make names up for like this is the shitty song. This is this one. So we I don't really want to give you some funny names, but we basically I don't know. As soon as I can tell you the confirmed title, Ryan, you'll be the first to know because awesome. There's loads of titles been thrown about, and I don't really, because the reason why I don't want to say it is because the last time we put a title out for the first record, and then we didn't title the first record, a girl went and got it tattooed, and I don't want to do it again because right. We actually never titled the record. We decided not to go with it, and this girl has now got a tattoo to an album that doesn't, that just doesn't exist, that title, because she's such a fan. So I was like, oh, fuck, so
right.
I don't want to say it in case anyone hears it and goes out and gets a tattoo or something like that, because that was pretty harsh.
Right. That's funny, though. I mean, maybe you should just you could call the second album Tattoo This Album. That should be the name of it, man.
Cool. I like that. I do like that. In fact, one person got in touch with me and asked me to send them the lyrics in advance. So I sent the lyrics. And this was another girl, actually, who got the lyrics tattooed. Now, luckily, I didn't change them because I've got a habit of changing the lyrics. But she did go and get like half the song tattooed on her arm, and I'm thinking, what if I change that? You know, it's because I'm that's what I do. So it's kind of weird. But no, we just for anyone that's listening, it's a Static Cult number two. That's all they need to know at the moment. I'll make sure Ryan knows first, and he'll let you all know.
Right. I mean, well, I appreciate that, man. And hey, when the album is done, man, definitely keep us in a loop for the beginning of the year. We hope to still be around, and we plan on definitely being around, and we would definitely like to have you guys back on and play some new tracks and do all that good stuff. Now, obviously, you know, writing new material, you mentioned, you know, obviously continuing writing all the time. So when you get into the studio, you know, you've got this group of songs and, you know, ideas and structures and all these things. I mean, obviously, you know, this time around, you know, you mentioned the album being a little heavier than this album. Yeah, is there, you know, obviously, you know, being in the studio can be obviously stressful. Is there anybody in the band that, you know, like when things kind of get tense, you know, they kind of break the tension or do anything to kind of, hey, man, let's take a step back or have a drink, or, you know, is there, you know, any joking or, you know, pranks being played on one another, that kind of thing?
To break up the tension?
Yeah.
Sadly, we don't really get that tense on each other. It's not like with previous members, we used to get quite stressful, but we'd just kind of take a break or take time outs, as you guys say. We just kind of, you know, we don't really spend a lot of time together when we're not actually doing the band. So, no, we don't really have stress relievers. The biggest stress reliever is everyone has their own thing. We just sit and have a couple of beers and stuff while we're writing. So everyone's kind of chilled already, and that just makes it work. There's never really any arguments to the writing. It just kind of we've kind of got a strict policy where if things are shit, they're shit. So we don't, you know, if that's a shit riff, we won't use it. We don't have a lot of people get hung up on what they've written. Like, that's my song. Well, you know, I don't care. You know, it's like, no, if it's not working, we don't want to put it out. So we're trying to produce the best music we possibly can. You know, we don't want to give paying customers or kids really, you know, poor quality material. We want every song to be the best. I mean, it was strange. I had Chev the bassist down at my house, and we were playing off tracks that we never used on the last record, and he's saying, why didn't you use that? That's amazing. Why didn't you use that song? That's amazing. And it's one, I'm trying to, and I was just explaining, it's not a 1,000%, you know, fantastic. It has to be brilliant to make this record. That's how that's what makes the record good. So do you get what I mean? It's very
I definitely understand where you're coming from there, and it's good to hear that you guys are, you know, like, hey, you know, we got something we're working on, and, you know, hey, maybe it doesn't work, and maybe you can put it on the back shelf and rework it later, and yeah, find something that you guys enjoy, or, you know, feel that your fans are gonna, you know, respect. You don't want to put something, obviously, you know, you don't want to just put something out just to put something out. And I respect that a lot. Tell you what, the next song we're in here tonight is "Embers and Ashes." Again, another really solid track off the album. Talk to me about this song and the title of it. How you guys came up with, you know, lyrics? You know, who do you take more part in the lyrics, or is it kind of a collaborated effort?
I write everything. I write the music and the lyrics. So what I do is I take in the track to the band. The band then put on I don't write the drums or I just write the track, and the you know, Barry will put his drums on it, Chev will put his bass on it. Everyone puts their own parts on it on top of the basic track. They've complete freedom to do that. There's and I love that. That was the whole point of this project, was just to see what would happen with complete freedom. And I write 100% of the lyrics. The reason for the lyrics are I write from a very old point of view, where back in the 1700s, 1800s, people used to use the English language properly. So I use a lot of words from back then. I'm influenced by Oscar Wilde and Edgar Allan Poe heavily. And I love the style of writing. So I try to incorporate that style into today's, you know, angry punk rock. That was the reason. Embers and Ashes is primarily about the Holocaust, which a lot of people will be a bit surprised to hear. But it's also, I try and write from a totally fictional point of view so that no one is offended. It's just my interpretation, you know, a fictional interpretation so that no one can be offended, but written from three different points of view so that everyone, so there's something for everyone. And it also relates to today's generation. So that's why it's called Embers and Ashes. And I hope that people of today, when they read the lyrics, will be, you know, they'll be entertained by the story, but also intrigued by a lot of the words that we're using. Some of the words haven't been used for 200 years. It's just a strange way of, I just thought it'd be interesting to make people pick up a dictionary just to see how people actually spoke, because they used so much of the English language. It was wonderful. Today they seem to have, you know, it seems to be colloquialized so much. That's why.
Well, cool, man. I'll tell you what, let's take another break here, and we'll jam out some Embers and Ashes here on Revelator with the Static Cult. Here on Revelator, the Static Cult, hanging out with Jimmy from the band. And I tell you what, man, obviously you guys have a lot of long-term goals. You know, obviously, you know, we halfway through a new album, which will come out in 2014. How do you manage, you know, free time, man? You know, obviously touring, writing, you know, all these different things you got going on. What do you enjoy in your free time, you know, to kind of take a step back from the music industry and you know, recording and all that stuff? What do you like to do in your free time, man?
Well, what has actually taken up most of my time is I've just had a daughter, so she's dominated most of my day. So, and as you know yourself, Ryan, having kids, it's a full time job. So I just kind of spend time as much as possible so that, you know, I have that quality time with her when she is this age. So that, you know, that's how I spend my time when I'm not writing. So it's either that or writing, spending time with the family. It's kind of very anti rock and roll, but to me, that's punk rock in itself. So that's what I do. The other guys have different things. I think Barry plays pool all the time, and you know, Chev's got his. He plays in different bands as well. So the other guys have got different things going on. But that's how I relax.
Well, cool. That's nothing better than taking time out to raise your child and your family and stuff, and you know. It's a noble cause. I feel the same way, man. It's an enjoyable job to have, you know, because it doesn't necessarily feel like a job, you know.
I saw the movie Punk Rock Dad.
I have not. No,
you should check it out. It's you know, like bands like Rancid and Blink 182 and it's produced by Morgan Spurlock, you know, the fast food guy, you know him.
Yeah.
The indie guy. It's absolutely wonderful, wonderful movie, and it's about how to raise children while being a punk rocker. It's based on Jim Lindbergh, you know, the singer from Pennywise.
Yes.
Based on his life and just how he raises his children. It's absolutely fantastic. You should check that out. It's well recommended. I played with Jim a couple of years ago, and he's a fantastic guy, and he talked to us about it. So I checked it out, and it's fantastic. So I'm recommending it to everyone out there, to yourselves, Mike and Ryan. Check it out. It's absolutely wonderful, and it's a fantastic nod to parenthood.
Awesome. Yeah, well, definitely, I'll definitely get that in the queue for movie viewing one of these nights, man. Thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah.
Now, you obviously, you know, if people are interested about what you guys are up to, the Static Cult, how can they find out more information about you guys, man?
Well, you can always head to the websites, you know, staticcult.com, Facebook /staticcult, Twitter /staticcult to find out more exactly what we're doing, tour dates and updates. That's how you get a hold of us.
Wonderful. Well, we usually don't play four songs for many bands, but you guys tonight, I thought that, you know, this last song we're going to play called Dancing on a Burning Ship was definitely worth having a fourth song played. And appreciate you having the willingness to play an extra song on the show. And we kind of talked about this off air a little bit. You know, I like the track, and it's a really eerie, kind of a dark. It's really a dark song, man. It really is. And the vocals, the female vocals on it are great. The harmonies are great on it. And you mentioned, you know, people, you know, having it played at their weddings and stuff, you know, and you know, I guess to each his own. But I mean, it's really a dark, meaningful song, man. There's obviously, you know. There's something about that song. It's just, you know, the first time I heard it, you just kind of stop and listen. I mean, it's really eerie, creepy, but it's well done, and people are going to hear it here in a moment. But talk to me about, you know, the writing of this song, and maybe where you were at the time and when you wrote this thing.
Okay. Well, the song is, as you say, Ryan, it's quite dark. What happened was I went through a divorce, and I thought this would be the perfect way to you know, have closure, as people say, or just kind of, you know, be cathartic about the, you know, what's just happened. So I thought I'd write about it in a more romantic way, and I thought it would be interesting to write. I was basically taking ideas from. You remember the band on the Titanic, and what happened was I saw something. I think it was a movie or something that said, and the band played on, and what happened was the band actually genuinely played while people were dying. And I thought, isn't that in a strange but dark way romantic? Because they knew they were going to die, and they knew they were going to go under, but they just kept playing. And I thought, that's kind of cool. That, you know, so I don't mean cool in a you know, they're going to die, but I just thought it was a really romantic idea. So I thought, I'll just take the idea but twist it. And so I thought, well, what about if we're dancing on a burning ship? So you know it's going to go down. You know everything's gone to shit. So I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if we just kept dancing while, you know, it just goes to fuck? And that was the idea behind the song. And I thought, you know, there we go.
There you go, man.
I'm cool. Sorry, people's ideas are kind of blown, you know, that it's romantic, you know, it's this kind of, no, it's a breakup song. It's a kind of dark breakup song. That was the idea behind it. It was a personal song for me, and I thought I'll add it to the album as the closing track.
Right. If people
like that song, there is more coming. So there's an exclusive for you. There's more kind of styles of that on, you know, coming on the next record. So you can expect more dark lyrics.
Ross, oh, cool, man. I dig the track, and I appreciate you sharing it with us tonight on the show. And hey, Jimmy, it's been a pleasure talking with you, man. Best of luck to you. Definitely keep in touch, man. And hey, when the new album is ready to go at the beginning of the new year, definitely keep us in mind, man. We'd love to have you back on.
Without a doubt, Ryan. Without a doubt, thank you so much to you and Mike. It's been a pleasure. You know, thank you to everyone out there. Keep checking us out, and I'll speak to you all soon. Take care.
Wonderful. Jimmy, again, take care. This is the static called Dancing on a Burning Ship here on Revelator.
Skin against the flame. Hold tight, close your eyes till you can't feel the pain. Till the scars that cripple our hearts slowly disappear. We've been dancing on a burning ship for all these years. Whoa. As the cancer eats away through your veins, we are dead in the water as we drown in the flames. The air in our lungs slowly disappears. We've been dancing on a burning ship for all these years. Broken wings, we can't fly. In the flames where we lie, lay down by me. Sweep as our scars erase in eternal embrace. Lay down by me. Against the flame. Hold tight, close your eyes till you can't
feel the pain from the wreckage of the storm. We shed no tears.
We've been dancing on a burning ship for all these years.
For all. Oh.
Static Cult here on Revelator. Dancing on a Burning Ship, again, a very eerie track. And thanks to Jimmy for stopping by. Pleasure talking with a really cool guy. And look for Static Cult new album coming out in the new year, 2014. And for more information about Static Cult and about this episode, please head on over to omnes.tv. That's omnes.tv. Click on episode Revelator number 17. And I tell you what, let's close out tonight with the movies at the box office and also a quick review of World War Z that I went and saw last week as well. Iron Man 3 finally dropping out of the top 10 after 9 weeks in the theater, $405 million. Number 10 at the box office, $1.4 million. The Internship, Star Trek, still hanging in the top 10 at 7 weeks in the box office at $220 million, only made just a shade over $2 million this past weekend. Fast and Furious 6 at $2.4 million. Now You See Me at $5.6 million. This Is the End at $8.7 million. Man of Steel, $20.7 million. White House Down, its opening weekend at $24.8 million. World War Z, $29.7 million. I was skeptical about going to see this movie. And I kept seeing people were like, man, you got to see it. You got to see it. You got to see it. It's awesome. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go see it. So we get in the theater. It's a long movie, but you don't realize how long it is, and that's, you know, I guess a good sign of a really, really solid film is even though it's a long film, you don't notice how long it really is. And, man, from the word go in this movie all the way, I mean, it is really, really an intense film. It's really well done. Man, I mean, I will honestly say it made me jump. There's a couple points in the movie where it's not necessarily a scary film, but there's, I mean, I guess if you think about that happening in the world, yes, is very terrifying. But as far as a horror film, no. But there are some parts where it made me jump in the movie. And it had me on the edge of my seat. And it was start to finish, action-packed, intense is the best word I can use to describe this film. Is just absolutely 100% intense. Brad Pitt is great. And I like a lot of films that Brad Pitt is in. Fight Club, 12 Monkeys. You know, the list goes on. The guy's a really, really talented actor. And really, really well done. And made $29.7 million, $123 million in its first 2 weeks at the box office. The movie The Heat at $39 million. And number one for the second week in a row at $45.6 million is Monsters University. And it's 2 weeks at the theater, $170 million at the box office. Wow. Well, hey, that's all I've got for you here on the Revelator Show. Now, next week, we got, you know, should we have a really couple cool guests on? And don't forget, July 16th, the Revelator Music Show featuring a lot of our past guests, Spider Rockets, The Hush, True Apothecary, The Lauren Wolf Band, Varna. The list goes on there. Kev from Atomic Honey, a new track from them as well. So definitely check that out here in a couple weeks on Revelator. Hey, it seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody.
This was episode 17, Crowd Surfer Related Injuries. For show notes or links to topics discussed on this episode of Revelator, or to experience previous episodes, head on over to omnes.tv, that's omnes.tv, and click on Revelator. Thanks for listening.